Hello, rich girls. Welcome back to Old Money, the podcast to help you build the trust fund you wish you were born with. I'm your host, Amber Evenson, coming at you today with so much love. How are you guys? We are in the middle of a conversation that you have all, I don't want to say pushed me into. It's not that you've bullied us to get here, but the response has been so great. These hidden money patterns, the financial fight or flight, the conversations about nervous system all started really with the interview I did with Jessica a few weeks ago, and it's just spiraled. And you guys are totally into it, and I'm so happy to get back into it today with a very interesting conversation about why smart people make bad money decisions. If you are listening to Old Money Podcast, I'm confident you're a smart girl, you're a rich girl, you're here, you're learning. You're trying to grow. You're trying to figure it out. We're trying to build. We're doing the things. I have fallen into this trap so many times. I know so many of our listeners have as well. But by the end of this episode, I think you're going to understand better the hidden patterns that have been running our financial lives without our permission. And you're going to see that it's not just costing you money. It's costing us in all five dimensions of our life. And so we need to fix it. I spent a lot of time, and you might relate to this, feeling guilty and embarrassed that I, quote, couldn't control my spending, or I would have these episodes where I was like, where did all my money go? And it was always when I was triggered, when I was stressed about something, something was going on. You guys have heard my famous story of when I first adopted Poppy, dropped her off at the vet. I thought she was going to die. I called my mom. I was in the Jeep. I went to Anthropology to buy some candles. And lo and behold, I sideswipe a Volvo. I was crying so hard, I could not see where I was parking. And that was the worst credit card debt situation that I had been in after crawling my way out of it. And I knew something had to change. And it wasn't budgeting better. It wasn't about not spending any money on lattes. It was something that I had to fix in, I didn't know it at the time, but a nervous system pattern that I didn't choose. So today's episode, we're going to recap. If you are an OG listener, you know financial fight or flight. We're going to talk about it, what it looks like in real life. We're also going to talk about some unconscious patterns financial fight or flight can create in your life, including the I want to feel better or I deserve this kind of like framework that we all have, and how these patterns are quietly just depleting all five dimensions of wealth in our lives. And of course, stay till the end. I have some amazing shout outs. It's becoming your guys' favorite part of the show. I'm loving it too. Don't forget to send in your shout outs, your questions, your comments, your thoughts, your prayers, whatever it is, to oldmoneypodcast@gmail.com or go to my Instagram. Send me a voice note. Say what's up. Actually, don't send a voice note if you want a shout out because I will not remember what you said. But anyway, let's get into it. Let's start talking about financial fight or flight, kind of this reintroduction. We've been talking about nervous system regulation and nervous system dysregulation for a few episodes now, like what it looks like in your body, where it came from, the patterns it inherited, all of that. And today I want to go super specific because there is a name for what happens when that dysregulation touches your money. And I've coined this term. So if you've ever heard anybody else say this term, credit back. I said it first, financial fight or flight. And once you understand how it works, you're going to see it everywhere. You know what regular fight or flight is. Fight, flight, freeze, fawn. If you can say that five times fast, good on you. That is what happens when your nervous system treats an external input like a threat. We know it from, you know, the way that your brain triggers survival when you start to get chased by a grizzly bear or a wildebeest in the wild. All of the blood rushes away from your brain and into your limbs so that you can run as fast as you've ever run before so you can survive and outrun the predator that's chasing you. The same thing happens even if there's not a physical threat, even if there's not a real threat. If you imagine a threat, if you close your eyes right now and you picture yourself driving down the road on a beautiful day, and you come up a hill and you've got your music on and your windows down and you've got your loved ones in the car. And as you crest this hill, you see a semi truck coming at you at 1,000 miles per hour, about to slam into your car. You can give yourself the same feelings of emotions, even if it's not real. I'm not saying that money stress isn't real. Money stress is very real, but it isn't a physical threat. It's more of a financial threat. Financial fight or flight is what I talk about when your nervous system is treating money as a threat. And it responds with the same like biological activation in your body physiologically as if you were in real danger. Now, what can trigger financial fight or flight is literally anything. It can be, again, an external influence, an external trigger, like a credit card bill or a low bank balance or a salary negotiation, an investment decision, an unexpected expense, like a medical expense, or, you know, you get in a car accident and there's an insurance expense. All of a sudden, all the blood moves away from your brain, your prefrontal cortex, where you make all your good decisions and you think rationally and you can handle strategy, you have patience, and it floods into your amygdala, into your limbs, into making your heart beat really fast, making it feel hard for you to catch your breath, all of that. It's your body going into survival mode. And the thing is that a lot of us create our own money stress. We create our own money stress by doing these patterns of behavior like we talked about in the last episode. And hopefully you downloaded the workbook that I gave to you guys for free last week. Again, there is a free chapter of the Old Money Mindset workbook available for you. I'll put the link in the show notes, and it's helping you uncover your money beliefs and your money habits, all the things that we've inherited from our families that were not the trust funds that we asked for. And a lot of those money habits show up in attachment styles. Now, I have an amazing resource and an amazing episode. Actually, I'm going to link to the episode if you haven't listened to it yet, all about attachment styles with money. There are four attachment styles. And if you do not know what your attachment style is, I have a quiz for you. I'll link that also in the show notes. You can find it on the Old Money Podcast website. But this attachment style quiz gives you the answer of what your money attachment style is. The four are you avoidant? Do you have an anxious attachment? Do you have a disorganized attachment or a secure attachment? Interestingly, and what I found through my research is that more than likely, the way that you relate to your money is also your coping mechanism for how you show up in your relationships. I, for example, have a disorganized attachment wound both with my money and with my partner. If you want to learn more about that, the podcast episode that I recorded, I don't know the number off the top of my head, but we'll put it in the show notes. It goes through everything you need to know. After you take the quiz, you find out what your attachment style is. You can listen to the episode and it goes through how you inherited these attachment styles, the coping mechanisms that show up both with your money and your relationships, and then also how to move out of these not so helpful habits into a more secure relationship with your money. But anyway, back to the point, I was saying how we create our own money stress. So whether the money stressor comes from outside the house or from inside the house, these money stressors trigger your amygdala to fire, your prefrontal cortex, which is where all the good decisions are made. It goes offline, and that leads you to impulsive or avoidant money decisions, which lead to guilt, shame, embarrassment, self-talk that's negative, which leads to more stress, which leads to money stress, which takes your prefrontal cortex offline, and then it makes your amygdala fire. Do you see how this is the financial fight or flight system? This is exactly why the budget that you make at the beginning of the month, when you feel very calm and you just got your paycheck and you're feeling all good, gets abandoned by Thursday afternoon after happy hour when you had a really hard day at work. It's not the same nervous system. You are in a completely different mental state, emotional state, physical state. You have a different brain. And you're going to make completely different decisions. But here's the thing. When I'm looking at the results of the money attachment style quiz, and it's anonymous, by the way, I don't know who's responding with what, but I'm seeing a lot of rich girls, they're ranking themselves as secure. As we talked about, if you're listening to this podcast, you're a smart girl. You're probably a high performer. And this is actually a trap. There is a high performer trap with this because the women in this audience that I know, they are earning great incomes. They are running businesses, managing careers and households. And many of them, many of you are still operating from financial fight or flight because income does not regulate your financial nervous system. It just raises the stakes. A high income woman can still be in financial fight or flight. It doesn't mean she spends less impulsively. She's probably posting her Chanel haul of all the things she got from the new Matthew Blasi connection. If you guys have been seeing this, it's out of control. Chanel is on fire again. This is the new era. Karl Lagerfeld, Matthew Blasi, these are going to be cornerstones in the Chanel history. You just wait and see. But I'm seeing so many people spending, 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 showing, showing, showing. It doesn't mean that you spend less impulsively or you heal your habits when you just make more money. A six-figure income can still feel like not enough for a lot of people. You might say, if I made $10,000 a month, I would never have another worry again in the world. And there is somebody who's saying, if I made $10,000 a month, I would be broker than a joke and $100,000 is my new baseline. Like you can imagine, whatever income level you're at right now, just pretend you're at 10x your income level and whatever bill just showed up and triggered you was a bill that was 10x. When you make more and you get more successful, it's the same thing. You have a conversation about salary or what to charge in your business and it still triggers you. Or checking your bank account when you're not sure what you're going to find, or you're a business owner and you get a fat tax bill and you're trying to be like, okay, breathe through it. Listen, if you're going through this at any income level and you're like, I'm so smart, why am I still doing this? You're not alone. Even making a large purchase for me, even one that I can afford, still triggers me because it's just not what my nervous system is accustomed to. None of these things are objectively dangerous or threatening. But if our nervous systems have not learned how to regulate with money, it responds to everything like a threat, like we're being chased. It's so easy to fall into this trap, and it's something that we can get out of. That's the good news. I used to fall into this trap for months, for weeks, for years, and now I recognize it and my bounce back rate, I'm out of it in 24, 48 hours. If I make a bad call, bad decision, I now have the tools to support myself to get back without a lot of shame, guilt, fear, anxiety, avoidance, disorganized attachment. I'm able to get out of it. That's the goal. The goal is not to avoid all of this stuff and be perfect. The goal is to be honest about what it is that triggers us and what our coping mechanisms are, be aware of them, and then know how to treat ourselves better. And I'm going to tell you a secret at the end of this episode about how wealthy women are playing so differently. The most regulated woman that I know told me something after I shared with her. I had an experience just last week on a call with my finance team, and it literally made me cry. On the call, I was completely overwhelmed. I had this big knot in my throat. I was crying. I was crying tears of joy because it was such a feeling of, oh shit, things are different. And just wait until I tell you what she told me after. It's going to completely change your mindset on making money. But before we get to that, I want to talk about some of these patterns, these coping mechanisms, the ways that I think financial fight or flight shows up that are super, super relatable. You're going to be like, oh yeah, that's me, that's me, that's me. I've done all four of these things. And these patterns are the patterns that show up when we are dysregulated, when we're in a state of financial fight or flight or emotional fight or flight, and we're trying to cope. And these are the things that we do or we tell ourselves. And they're the things that eat away at our ability to actually build the lives that we want. The first pattern, and just let me know if you've ever said this, I deserve this. You guys, I deserve this. I work so hard. I deserve this. Let me ask you a question. When are we saying that we deserve this? Because for me, it's usually when I'm stressed out, like a hard day. I'm going to order Uber Eats. I deserve this. Or after a difficult conversation or a hard period of time, I've just pushed so hard. I deserve this. I just worked out so hard. I'm going to eat a nothing bundt cake. I deserve this. You guys, I'm obsessed with nothing bundt cake. But my point is this. It's always after stress, after you've gotten over something. And that is an activated nervous system that needs relief. You're looking for a dopamine hit, whether it's a cake or it's a Chanel. And it's going to temporarily quiet the amygdala in your brain for, scientifically speaking, 20 minutes. Then you're going to go into the guilt spiral, the stress response, and then it's going to set up your next spiral. I deserve this is not abundance thinking. It is survival thinking. dressed up as self-care. I just don't believe that I deserve this is ever coming from a place of I've earned this. Do you see the difference? I've earned this, like I've saved for it. I want to memorialize this important milestone versus I deserve this. The I deserve this framing, that language feels petulant. It feels immature. It feels like an excuse. It feels like you're bypassing what's actually happening. If you've earned something, if you're memorializing something, if you've planned for something, it's not coming out of a I deserve this mentality, which is so entitled. It's coming from quiet recognition that can be pre-planned, thought about in advance, earned up to or worked towards, not a let me release myself from this stressful day. Remember when everybody was talking about girl math? The reason that went so viral is because, of course, we've all done it, but it's not a cute financial concept. It's shorthand for when we're making money decisions from a dysregulated place. Like my girl math is always if I return something at Zara and I have $200 back from Zara, all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I just saved $200. Oh, perfect. I have more money towards my shopping budget. So let me go buy Bloomingdale's and Sephora and Nordstrom and everything else. And all of a sudden that $200 that I quote unquote got back is gone again, but like times five because I've re-spent that $200 at every store in the mall. Remember, when we're dysregulated, we are not thinking clearly with our rational decision-making brains that can process numbers and figures and things. If you're dysregulated, you're not going to make good decisions with money. That's why those things happen. I don't know if you guys are watching Real Housewives of Beverly Hills right now, but they just went on this trip to Florence. And so crazy, by the way, that like you're in Florence, you don't go to the Duomo, you barely go to Ponte Vecchio. They're in Bottega and Dolce & Gabbana and Fendi and wherever else, Gucci, all the stores that are right there at home for them on Rodeo Drive in Beverly Hills. But they're talking about, and Kyle Richards is saying, she literally gets a high. Like she's like in a ping pong race or what did she say? A relay race when she's shopping because it literally gets her nervous system like activated and she's having quote unquote so much fun. But, you know, she has a different budget than we do, of course. But however, I can still imagine all of these women buying all of these things and still have them hanging new with tags. They never wear them. They don't fit their body type. Just because they're spending the money doesn't mean that they have better shopping habits than you and I do. They're still buying stuff that ain't going to work for them. Okay. This is not from curating a beautiful wardrobe. This is not from collecting items they're so passionate about. This is they're on vacation. They're overstressed. They're not sleeping because of jet lag. Most of them have been drinking and they're shopping like lunatics, just spending money like there's no tomorrow. And when we see that on TV, that behavior becomes normalized for the rest of us. We might not be at those budgets, but it's like monkey see, monkey do. We see people shopping frantically like that, getting the high, and we ingrain that in our patterns of behavior and then take them on as our own. It's just not the best way to shop, y'all. You're not shopping in a regulated state. And listen, it's not usually the purchase that's the problem. The purchase may still make sense, but it's the state of where it came from. When you regulate the state, you might find that you don't want the thing anymore, whether that's the Postmates order or the Dolce & Gabbana dress in Florence. Okay, so the first pattern, the I deserve this spiral, it's one of the reasons why, again, smart women make bad money decisions because this is all running unconsciously. It's driven from your nervous system state, not from real desire. The second pattern here, and this I talk a lot about in the attachment style podcast episode, but it's avoidance. Avoidance is so common. And listen, I know a lot of you don't love when I talk about housewives, but whether or not you're into Bravo, I want to just take a quick pause and say the reason that I am so interested in the housewives and the reality TV show franchises is because it is a sociological study of women with other women. It's incredible. And it also is a cautionary tale of so many things of what not to do. DREET is avoidance 101. You open up the dictionary and you look at financial avoidance in the dictionary, and there's a picture of DREET in full glam being so avoidant. If you guys are not familiar, DREET is very famously flighty, fashion-forward. She's going through this crazy divorce right now. And her husband, he was the manager of Boy George for many years. I don't know about you guys, but Boy George ain't topping the charts right now. I don't know how this man is making money. It's always been very interesting how they've made their money or what money they have. It seems like they don't have a lot because they've constantly been embroiled in financial issues with creditors, with their mortgages, etc. It just came out a couple weeks ago that Dorit is liable for losing her home because they have not paid their mortgages to 51 private creditors since fall of 2025. So it's been about 6 months since they've made any payments on their homes, or rather home in Encino. And they have all of these different creditors. They don't even have like a traditional mortgage. She has two small children. This is tragic. This is horrible. Apparently her husband was the one that paid the mortgage. They're getting divorced. He's not paying anymore. Juxtapose this with the girls are on this trip and she's in the Hamptons spending $4,000 here. She's in Florence spending thousands of dollars there. She gets a book advance. She buys a mini Kelly for $11,000. She is spending, spending, spending. But if you have ever read a piece of pop culture news, you know that there's some financial issues in that household. What Dorit is doing is avoiding it. She's not checking the bank accounts. She doesn't know how much money they have in their retirement, if they have any at all. The habits here are leaving your bills unopened, not knowing your net worth, avoiding checking your investment accounts when the market goes up or goes down, not initiating a money conversation with your partner, not understanding how to access the money in your household. This avoidance is the freeze response. This is your body trying to survive. It's like we talked about, fight, flight, freeze, fawn. Freeze is when fight or flight don't feel available. Your system will freeze. You do not look. What you cannot see won't hurt you. You will put your head in the sand like a little ostrich. That's just like evolutionarily speaking, the way that your brain tries to protect you. And the cost of this is that every day of avoidance, every week of avoidance, every shopping trip where you don't actually know if you can afford what you're buying, the situation gets worse. The anxiety compounds. Your behavior becomes more and more erratic because you're trying to push down this fear, anxiety, this looming dread in your body and trying to pretend like you're regulated on top of it. Avoidance is the single most expensive money pattern that women carry because not knowing where you are financially, whether it's with your retirement or with your credit card debt, just not looking is not going to make it go away or magically grow. You have to look at your money. And I know that is so scary for so many of us that have coped by not looking for so long, but not looking does not make your money problems go away. It just makes them worse. Now, the next pattern, whether you are working for somebody in a corporate role at a small business, or you are a business owner yourself or a freelancer, this is one I've struggled with a lot, which is under-earning and undercharging. This shows up like consistently discounting your pricing below value, negotiating against yourself, accepting the first offer because negotiating feels very dysregulating. It does for me, by the way. Or staying in a role that overworks you or underpays you because going to find something else feels risky and scary, and you'd rather just stay with what you know. Our brains love to keep us safe. They don't necessarily love to keep us abundant and growing. Even if something is not healthy for us, or we know that there's something dysregulated or unfair, or you're not getting paid enough, it is safer for the brain because it's familiar to stay in the job where you're under-earning than it is to go look for a new one. It feels risky. It feels like you're abandoning your tribe. And if we think back to where this all comes from, this is all evolutionarily speaking. We are humans. We are just animals. Our brains are just trying to figure out these tens of thousands of years that we've evolved to find acceptance and safety. And if it's familiar, I can predict this. I know exactly what to expect. I don't have to work too hard. I'm going to stay here. The nervous system route of not charging more or not going for a new job is just a fear response, the same as any other threat. What if they say no? What if I'm rejected? What if they find out? What if I lose the whole thing? What if I'm not actually worth this? This language is all there trying to keep you safe, but it actually just keeps you small. This is, and we talk so much about this in Old Money Mindset, the poor little girl pattern. If you haven't listened to episode 140, go back, not to Gigi's episode, one before that. Listen again to the poor little girl and let me know if that comes up for you. This is where it shows up for me. It operates directly in my income, or it has in the past before I got a hold of her and before I learned how to turn on the wealthy woman. She learned, the poor little girl, that authority controls your security. Somebody else gives you your paycheck. Asking for more is scary and threatening that authority. So you don't ask, you just sit and wait. You overdeliver, you overperform. And then you're like, why is nobody noticing me? Why is nobody noticing how hard I'm working here? A big jump for that in me was leaving my corporate role and kind of getting out of that. But then it's not like you heal it once and it never shows up again. It shows up for me every once in a while again when I'm emotionally dysregulated or I'm feeling some sort of fear, scarcity, et cetera. And again, it's not avoiding having all of these feelings. It's, can we recognize it and then move past it? In upcoming episodes, we're going to talk about how we're going to move past it. But right now we're just noticing, oh, okay, this is showing up for me. You guys know this and you've heard this. You've read it in Business Insider, on Yahoo News. Yeah, I've said it here on Old Money Podcast. The best way to grow your income is to switch jobs. So if you've been at your job for more than 5-6 years and you haven't switched yet, it's time for you to switch jobs. And if you are unclear on how to earn more, I have an episode on that. I don't know the episode number off the top of my head, but you got to align yourself with the business goals. If you can impact the bottom line of a business, big or small, you will earn more. That's why people in sales make so much money. That's why people with a specific set of skills that that business needs at that time can make a lot of money. So if you are under earning or you're undercharging, you're not alone. This is a very common pattern that your poor brain is running you through just to keep you safe. You're not alone. It's something that so many women do, but there is a better way. The last pattern I want to talk about is one I'm intimately familiar with, the self-sabotage, specifically after wins. The way that this shows up is when you get a windfall, you get a bonus, you get a commission check, and you immediately overspend it. Or if you're like me, let me tell you how impressive I was with self-sabotage. I would anticipate the bonus check coming. I would anticipate the tax return. And I wouldn't even wait until I got the check. I would spend it before I even had it, putting myself in credit card debt. And then I would get the check and all of the money that I just earned was going to pay off my debt. That's how good I was at self-sabotage. Or another thing that I see a lot, unconsciously creating chaos when things are going too well. Like at a job, if your nervous system is regulated for chaos, gossip, conflict, high stress situations, you become attuned to that like it's your new baseline. So when things are not chaotic anymore, your body's like, something must be wrong here because all I know is chaos. And if I go to a regulated workplace or a regulated relationship with somebody who's actually securely attached and all you've ever known are crazy ex-boyfriends, your body's like, this is not right. This is not good. Let me create some chaos and make this a little spicy, a little interesting. I'm going to tell you how this shows up for me. Whenever I'm on a health journey, a wellness cleanse or whatever, I will get through 3 months of being so diligent and dedicated. And I'm like, damn, I look so good. I feel so good. Let me get over to Nothing Bundt Cakes. Give me the 9-incher. I'll take the whole damn thing. You guys, I totally sabotage my health goals because it's just not familiar to me. I've done it so many times over and over again. And then I go into that shame and that guilt and that spiral. Self-sabotage is such an insidious thing that so many women go through because our bodies, our nervous systems can only hold as much as feels familiar. If the baseline is scarcity, if the baseline is chaos, then abundance and peace is going to trigger dysregulation, even though you know in your brain that's what you should want. Even though you know in your brain it's going to be easier for you. Even though you know in your brain those are the things that we're striving for. If we're not used to them, our systems are going to self-correct back to what feels normal, even when normal is less than what we deserve or not good for us. And this is not a moral failure. This is not us not being smart. Again, this whole episode is about things that smart women do that keep us broke, right? You can only hold what your nervous system believes is safe to hold. So the practice is expanding that capacity, that practice is learning to hold more so that you can have more. That's what this whole thing is about. I'll give you a quick preview to where this goes in Old Money Mindset, but if you downloaded the workbook, I'm going to tell you where this practice shows up. The free chapter of the workbook, again, you can get that in the show notes. It'll go straight to your email. It's a Google Doc. You can print it out and write in it. You can do it right in Google Docs. I give you the instructions and it walks you through like 15 different parts. And I find it to be, it helped me so much. I have gotten so much feedback. It's been so incredibly helpful and impactful for people. But the way that this expansion exercise comes up is that we've got to find expanders in our lives. And it's one of the other reasons why I love watching reality TV and reading and studying things like how does Warren Buffett run his investment empire to how does Emma Greed run her business? And that's why these podcasts of business leaders and founders and entrepreneurs are so popular, because all these people are expanders. So when you go through the workbook, there's a part of the exercise where, if you've done this, you know, it says, where have you gotten your beliefs from? And we're identifying where we absorbed beliefs from people, that we need to send their beliefs back to them. And then we're going to need to find expanders or people who have the right beliefs, the right vibes, the different outlook on things. And on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, third reference, sorry for everybody that hates Bravo, but it's so relevant. Amanda Francis truly is, in my opinion, showing an expansive way of being on a show like this. Now, is she insufferable the way she talks about money and her belongings and her business? 100%. Like, oh my gosh, if she says that I'm the breadwinner one more time, it's just not necessary. If a man said that about a woman, we'd be like, please shut up. So let's hold ourselves to the same standards, ladies, right? I digress. She is refusing to get dysregulated. She is refusing to get emotionally chaotic with these women in order to fight back and get activated. Now, she is missing the memo. We want you to come on the shows to be dysregulated for our entertainment. It's sick. It's like the Colosseum. It's like we're watching gladiators fight in the Colosseum. It's the same thing. It's just now on television with lipstick on it. It's the same thing. We're humans. We're wired that way. It's sickening. I get it. I understand it. I also think it's gross. But what she's doing here is she's expanding my capacity of what it really means to be emotionally regulated while you have a camera on you, while everybody's judging you, while somebody's attacking your livelihood, while these crazy characters are trying to get you riled up, they're talking poorly about you, they're making fun of you, they're being unkind, and she has so far stayed so regulated through it all. Not one character on any TV show is all good or all bad. Not any one person, a real estate mogul or entrepreneur, is all good or all bad. But if you can find some of these expanders where you can take clues from them or tips from them or practices from them and watch them doing the thing that you want to do, it helps normalize it for your nervous system. If you can internalize it and learn from them instead of passively watching, reflect on it. Wow, I want to give Amanda Francis credit for how she has been so regulated in this crazy environment. I think that's a really good expander. So in the workbook, I'm going to ask you to name some expanders of some places that you can go, of people you admire who can help you learn the skills and the new nervous system normal of what it is that you want to do. I teased this earlier, but I want to share a story with you about that. So it's true. I did cry on a call recently. It's been a while since I've cried on a call. This was the first time I think I've cried on a call out of pure happiness and relief, because I had an issue with one of my financial workbooks that my whole business looked broken, but it was really the spreadsheet that was broken and I didn't have appropriate cash flow planning. If you want some information on all of this, I recommend you go back to Shannon Weinstein's episode with the CFO. She's so brilliant. She's not my CFO. She's a friend of mine and a brilliant CFO. She talks a lot about this and how differently a CEO can be for their team, for their business, for business development, when they're regulated because they know their numbers. And we went through this call, we fixed the spreadsheet, we had accurate numbers pull through. It was one of those things like it revealed itself, like all the different little cells changed. It was like ding, 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 ding. And I saw the money that we had in cash flow at the end of the year, and I literally cried. I literally got this huge knot in my throat and I went, oh my God, we're going to be okay. And it was this spreadsheet. It was my fear. It was not knowing. It was not being intimate with my numbers, my sales, my staff costs, my overhead expenses, my taxes. I was so nervous and so scared. And on this call, the feeling of relief that washed over me was unlike any drug I've ever taken in my life. It was freeing. It was freeing in a way that, like, I didn't even know that I needed. And what it took was me being the executive that I needed to be and calling my financial team and saying, hey, there's something wrong with the spreadsheet. Here are the different ways that I can see that the spreadsheet is wrong. Here's what I'm noticing. These are the items that need to be fixed. Let's go through it together and resolve this. That's executive level behavior. I'm responsible for the executives in my firm. And so I have to make sure that I'm double checking their work. You just can't take everything from everybody because they're a quote unquote expert and say, like, oh, this is good. Together, we went through it with a fine tooth comb. We fixed it. And the result of that was emotional for me. Because if I were just avoiding this, I would be just dealing with the anxiety that would be bubbling up in my body, trying to be normal. And if you have that anxiety bubbling up and you don't know if you're going to be good with your team, we were always going to be good with paying the team, by the way. Like, it was other things that I wanted to make sure that we could cover and do and all the other things, my own personal wealth, the way that I can bonus out our employees at the end of the year in different divisions. It's a whole nother thing. But if I was just trying to cover that up, if you're a business owner that has $300 in your bank account and you're trying to make payroll tomorrow, think about how you're going to act. You're going to be stressed. That fear, anxiety, that unknowing, it's going to show up in the way you talk to your vendors, you talk to your team, you provide feedback, you provide coaching, you provide emotional resonance. You're going to put on a pair of glasses that have dark, deep, scary shades on them, and you're going to treat everything that you look at with that level of fear and anxiety. You're not going to be the best leader. You're not going to be the most regulated person. You're not going to be the most attractive option for your clients to talk to when you're in a sales conversation. Financial fight or flight does not just affect your bank account. It affects every dimension of your wealth. We've always talked on the show that wealth is more than just money, right? It's your health, it's your time, it's your relationships. It's the way that you get to live your life. And so the patterns that we've been talking about today, the I deserve this, the avoidance, the undercharging, under-earning, the self-sabotage, it doesn't just hurt your bank account. It hurts all five dimensions of your life. Of course, we know financially, you're never going to really get that wealth that compounds in the way that you deserve. You're going to hit an income ceiling that you just can't explain. You're going to feel like it's financial Groundhog's Day. You just are not moving differently year after year after year. Or with your health, this might show up with chronic stress, chronic inflammation, energy leaks. You're just exhausted because you're trying to shove this anxiety and fear down in your body and ignore it. You're normalizing burnout. You're skipping rest. All these symptoms that we've talked about in previous episodes, they're not just tapping you on the shoulder anymore. You're getting hit in the face with a 2x4. It's going to land you in the hospital. It's going to land you being out sick for a week. It's going to just drain your energy. You're going to be a bore to be around because you're just like depleted. And speaking of being that way, think about how this shows up in your relationships. Like, if you are constantly in a state of stress because you're doing and running all these unconscious patterns because you are still so financially dysregulated, you're going to be grading on the most important relationships in your life because you're acting from a place of survival. You're thinking about yourself. You're not considering other people's feelings or their experiences or how to help them win, or talking kindly with your partner about money, all of these things. It shows up in negative interactions with your boss, or, like for me, one of the lowest points in my career, yelling at my transaction coordinator in front of the entire office because she messed up a spreadsheet yet again, and it was a $6 million sale that had a bunch of errors on it, and I freaked out. And yeah, it sucked that it was wrong. We should have gotten somebody else in that role, to be completely frank with you. But you know what she didn't deserve as a person is me yelling at her in front of anybody. That was awful of me to do. I still have regrets about that to this day. That killed our relationship. We do not speak anymore. And she's still around. I know her like in other circles of people. We don't talk. She doesn't trust me. And that's totally her prerogative. That was me so dysregulated. But I told you, on the other side of my call when I was crying with my finance team. I got on the on a Voxer with Jessica Marks. And if you don't know Jessica Marks, great episode with her. You can go back and listen to it. She is my business advisor. And I told her about that feeling and how crazy it is. And she says, you know what the game is that you're going to start playing? And this blew my mind, you guys. The game that you're going to start playing is how early in the year can I now break even? When you get to a certain level of system in your business with your team in place and everybody's still growing, you're getting clients in, you have a marketing machine, your pipeline's full, your operations are strong. The vibes are not, let me post on Instagram and hope that somebody sees this so I can sell another client. The vibes are not, oh shit, this person was giving me major red flags on an intro call, but I needed the revenue, so I'm going to take it anyway. The vibes become, what do I really want to do? Where do I really want to play? And how early in the year can we break even, making sure that all of our bills are paid, our vendors are paid, our team is not just paid, but they're bonused out according to their contributions to the company, and that everything else in the year is gravy. That's how people are playing business. And what if you could play your life that way? What if you could front load your 401k in the first quarter of the year, and then that was done, and then you had all this other cash to play with, to invest in, to travel with? What if you started playing a game that was all about regulation? It was all about understanding the mechanisms, the inputs, the outputs, having such a strong grasp of it that the game that you get to play is, how fast can I get rich? How quickly can I be wealthy? How soon can I live the life of my dreams versus how long am I going to suffer? And this is the whole point of old money mindset. And it's why it's the foundational first level course. And I only have two courses because it's the stuff that what I've learned, it's the techniques that have changed my life to show up as that regulated business owner, to have these moments of how quickly can we hit break even in 2026, and then can I shorten that in 2027? And it's why I don't just talk about money on the show. It's a state of being. Wealth is not a number. It's a state of being. And the way that you show up of regulated and calm and lovely and happy and creative and expansive and interested in art and relationships and people and leisure and travel. Real wealth shows up not just in your bank account. It's the way that these wealthy women move and the way that you see them in the world, so calm and confident and dressed well because they have the time to indulge in themselves. Very different from somebody who's living in a state of survival. Am I right? The good news is that we are breaking it down, and I've never gone into such detail about a topic before, but I'd love to hear from you guys if you've liked this like bit by bit breakdown of it all, because it is a solvable problem. And we've already started solving the problem of being constantly dysregulated and constantly stressed and constantly in a state of financial fight or flight by just naming it, by just getting comfortable with knowing that it exists. If you haven't yet done the free workbook chapter that I gave you, it's all about understanding your money story and beliefs. You can get that in the show notes. And if you never took the attachment style quiz, that'll also be for you in the show notes. I'll link back to all the episodes that I reference so that you can kind of jump around and really dive in. And I have a really important announcement for you guys. Everything we've talked about, the dysregulation, the inherited patterns, all of the fight or flight that's running your money decisions in the background, this is what old money mindset is built to rewire, not with more information, but with an internal shift. And so I'm going to open the doors to old money mindset with a major discount at the end of this month. It's always available for you, but I'm talking so much about it. And you guys have been asking me so much more about this nervous system regulation. Thank you, Jessica, for kicking this whole conversation off. Jessica Kerwat. I want to give you guys an opportunity to get in at a discount with some special bonuses that are only available to women on the waitlist. So if you want to get on the waitlist, I will also put that link in the show notes, and you will be the first to get the biggest discount that I'm going to offer on any course ever. And it's going to be the only time I discount it this year. With that, let me go into a couple of shout outs that I have. Actually, three today. I told you I was going to add one more in. So the first one is from my girl, Kayla. It came through an Instagram DM. and she was referencing from episode 139, why dysregulated people do dysregulated things with money. And she wrote back and she said, I definitely needed to hear this episode after speaking with my accountant yesterday, trying to reframe my self-employed tax situation from, oh my God, I owe so much more in taxes this year, melty face, to, oh my God, I made so much more money last year. Yes, that is what this is all about, is all of these inputs, these different things that are going to influence us. It's all going to quote unquote trigger us in different ways. It's more about how we respond to it and bounce back from it than trying to avoid that it's going to happen, because it's going to happen. Next shout out is to Emma. She was responding to episode 135, How to Win Friends the Old Money Way Without Being Exhausting. By the way, this reminds me of Ladies of London. We need to talk about that show on the next episode. This is the best Bravo show that I've seen recently. Emma says, Hi, Amber. I love this podcast. I have been through many ex-best friend breakups. LOL. Same girl, same. I love most how you said, dog people talk to dog people. It's so true. People with the same interests as you will naturally talk to you because you have something in common. Thank you for such a good episode this week. It gave me so much comfort. I'm praying you have a very successful year full of growth, wealth, and health. Emma, that is so nice. Thank you. I appreciate that so much. I feel so rich in my friendships. I think that episode 135, if you need help making friends, maintaining friendships, understanding what it takes, it's a good one to listen to. And then the last comment or shout out goes to Barbie Harley. Love that name. She responded to the Doomsday Prepper episode, episode 136. And you guys, this one's getting a lot of attention, a lot of downloads. I think people out there are looking and seeing what's going on. Not that I'm a conspiracy theorist, but just look out this year for an energy crisis, some interesting governmental controls, lockdowns, things changing in our day-to-day lives because of what's going on, I'm just saying. And with that, the market's going to go down. And if you listen to that episode, you know what I'm going to do with that. Barbie says, creating a dry powder savings fund, naming it makes me motivated. I'm telling you guys, getting the Capital One high yield savings accounts where you can nickname all of your accounts and call it whatever you want, whether it's a dry powder savings, whether it's Botox fund, whatever it is super motivating because you know exactly where your money is going. It's such a regulated way to build wealth intentionally. Okay, my loves, thank you so much for being with me on this episode. Next week, we are talking about one of my favorite topics, the difference between performing wealth and actually building it. It's not just old money versus new money. It's about why looking rich and being rich are two very different nervous system states and what it costs you to live on the wrong side of the line. Love you guys so much. If this episode meant anything to you, I would appreciate a comment, a review, a rating, a screenshot, timelines, receipts. If you know, you know. But anyway, I love you guys so much. I'll talk to you on the next episode. Send me your shout outs. Bye. Look at you investing in your rich life one episode at a time. You're not just listening, you're leveling up. If you have questions, comments, thoughts, or prayers, slide into my inbox at oldmoneypodcast@gmail.com or in my DMs on Instagram at oldmoneypodcast. If this episode made you laugh, think, or write down a single note, please do me a solid and rate, review, and subscribe. It takes less time than your morning scroll, and it helps this show reach more future millionaires. And speaking of growing the network, please share this with your ambitious bestie, your business buddy, or your secretly rich aunt. Please share the gospel of old money, and I will be more grateful than a trust fund kid on distribution day. Thank you for being here. I'm rooting for your bank account, and I will catch you on the next episode of Old Money. Remember, I am not your lawyer, I am not your tax professional, and I am not your financial advisor. The content presented in this podcast is intended to entertain, educate, inspire, and support listeners and their personal and professional development, and does not constitute business, financial, or legal advice.